All right, hello everybody. Welcome to episode one of the Film and Photography Society Talking Pictures podcast for the 2021 to 2022 school year. So hello, welcome. I'm Andrew Lee.
And I'm Dylan Mahoney. And today, this episode is Spooky Suggestions. We asked for your favorite scary movie and you delivered. And the winner was Scream. So first off, I want to start by saying I absolutely love this movie. When you think of 90s horror, you think Silence of the Lambs, The Blair Witch Project, Candyman. But I think the quintessential film of the decade is without a doubt Scream. It's fun, it's self-aware, it screams 90s horror in the best possible way, no pun intended. And like The Blair Witch Project, it seemingly spawned its own genre whilst simultaneously revolutionizing the horror scene as a whole. You know, many of its predecessors clearly tried to reach its heights and cash in on its successes. Movies like I Know What You Did Last Summer and Halloween H20. But I don't think that they were able to tap into the magic in a bottle that Craven captured. So for those of you that don't know, Scream is a 1996 slasher horror movie directed by Wes Craven. And it is a meta take on the genre. And it's just a super fun mystery thriller. Andrew, would you like to take it away with some of your favorite parts?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, I put in my notes here that I thought that the first act and the third act of the film were like so great. And I really want to emphasize that the reason why they were so great is because of the editing and the storytelling. And so I remember, like, spoiler alert, near the end of the film, there is a scene where Randy is talking about, you know, how in horror movies, the virgin always lives, the virgin survives, right? And while he's talking about this, you have interspersed scenes of Sydney, the main character, losing her virginity. And I thought that was just a very clever way of sort of introducing a trope and discussing a horror movie trope to demonstrate that what the film is trying to accomplish while also setting up the stakes, because now we have a main character who is sort of breaking that horror movie rule and we have no idea what's going to happen to her. And so I just thought that was a very great moment of editing and storytelling, and it's not the only great moment either.
Absolutely, yeah. I just want to give a quick shout out to Wes Craven in general. You know, he's one of the most influential directors in the genre. I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street, obviously Scream. He was a monster maestro, if you will. And yeah, like you said, the movie is just great. It's very well edited. And I think also my favorite part, at least, are the characters. They're super meta in a refreshing way. I think that Officer Dewey is a top five horror character, and you cannot tell me I'm wrong. I think Sydney kind of reinvents the classic final girl trope, like you had just mentioned. And then Stu and Billy make for a fantastic twist, spoiler alert, that feels fresh and exciting. And the line, "My mom and dad are going to be so mad at me," is definitely the funniest line of the movie. And it's just, all in all, it's just great.
Yeah, I think the characters, at first when I watched the film, like, so I rewatched the film to talk about it here. But when I first watched it, like when I watched it for the first time, I just thought to myself, man, these characters suck. Like, I dislike them. I don't even really care about them too much. But I think the whole point of Scream's characters is they're supposed to be reprehensible. They're supposed to be unrealistic. They're supposed to be caricatures of stereotypical horror movie characters that are distant, that feel like just bodies to kill or reasons to show nudity or just like anything to sort of provoke an audience reaction that is sort of superficial, you know? But I think Scream really understands that and just abuses it to the max, and it's awesome.
Exactly. And I think just how self-aware it is makes it so much more fun and so much more exciting. Clearly, yeah, these caricatures are being portrayed to the extremes. But I think it really embraces that. And I think it embraces camp and it embraces the genre in such a loving way and with so much care. Obviously, you know, throughout the film, there are so many references. Clearly, Wes Craven is a huge admirer of John Carpenter. There are so many Halloween references. And, you know, I noticed one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when Sydney is stuck in a police car and one of the killers, the Ghostface, has the keys and he's unlocking the doors and she's freaking out. And he ends up coming in through the trunk of the car and he grabs her in the front seat. And it's literally a carbon copy of that same scene in John Carpenter's classic Halloween.
Yeah.
And there's just so many references that just make the film so much more exciting for big fans of the genre like myself.
Oh yeah, you have a lot of direct references to the film. The characters are literally watching the film in the film.
Yeah.
And so there's also like very brief, like even like Easter eggs too. Like in the opening scene, when Drew Barrymore is being harassed or sort of being taunted by the killer, when the killer asks Drew Barrymore the Halloween trivia question, like a brief snippet of the Halloween theme song plays. Yeah, and I was just like, was that the Halloween theme song? You're being a little clever there, Wes Craven. And yeah, it was just very, very brief, kind of subtle. Like I could have missed it if I didn't really pay attention. But yeah, I just found that to be so, so cool. And there's like another reference to one of Wes Craven's great movies, A Nightmare on Elm Street, when the principal, Fonzie, the guy who plays
Henry
Fonzie,
Winkler,
the
yeah.
principal, Henry Winkler, yeah, he is also he hears a strange knock on his door. He's being harassed by the killer. He opens the door and he sees the janitor. And the janitor's named Freddy, and Freddy is wearing a red and green striped shirt. And I was like, is that a reference to Freddy Krueger?
Yeah.
Yeah, and also like the character of Billy Loomis, that's Loomis is the name of the doctor from Halloween. So I was like, these can't be coincidences. They're most likely references, and I just really appreciated that. All these little Easter eggs that are supposed to be compliments or messages of love, like love letters to all the horror movie extravagants out there who love watching scary movies.
Exactly, yeah. You know, I think it makes the experience so that it's able to resonate with just the average moviegoer, and then also someone who's clearly dedicated to the genre and clearly will be able to pick up on those things. If anything, it just heightens the experience. But I think what really makes the movie stand out too is its pacing. That opening scene, like you were just talking about with the little Halloween reference, is easily my favorite opening scene to any horror movie ever. I think it's, you know, debatably the greatest opening to a horror movie of all time. You know, I remember this story that my mom told me when she went to go see it in theaters in 1997 on New Year's Day. The movie had just came out. It came out in December of 1996. And she recounts watching that opening and not being sure if she was going to be able to finish the movie. She got so scared by that opening 13 minutes that she didn't know if she would be able to keep watching. And it's to this day the most that a movie has ever scared her. And I think that really is just a testament to how good that intro is.
Yeah, like I said before, the first act and the third act are incredible. I also find it very interesting that on the movie poster of Scream, Drew Barrymore is in the front. Like she is sort of advertised to be like the lead character of the film,
Yeah.
and then spoiler alert, she dies in the first 15 minutes of the film, or first 10 minutes of the film. It's just such a left turn, you know. And this film is filled with so many left turns. And actually, we need to talk about that twist ending too, because
Absolutely.
that twist ending is great. Yeah, but first I wanted to add on to your pacing point. I think the movie's pacing is absolutely wonderful. Like it flew by for me so quickly, but in a way that felt good. Like the pacing wasn't too fast, nor was it too slow. I think the biggest contributors to the really great pacing of the film were the quick cuts and the dynamic camera movement. So in terms of the cuts, I feel like a lot of the shots in the film are like 2, 3, 4 seconds, no lingering shots. We get to see the different points of a scene very quickly. Different characters, different character, different character. And the camera is always moving too, which I find very like it adds to the energy and the enthusiasm and the pace and the urgency of the film. And so that's why I really think the pacing was solid here.
Exactly, yeah. And I think it's great how everything kind of comes together in terms of, like you were just talking about, the camera movements stay fresh and stay active and you know, help build that tension. And the story, you know, once it gets going, it never really lets up. There's always something going on, and there's always a new character being introduced, or there's always a crazy, gory murder going on. And so audience members don't really have a time to take a breath and process what's happening because there's already something new going on. And yeah, the cinematography of the film is great. One of my favorite shots. I don't know if it's a reference to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or not, but the main character, Neve Campbell, Sydney, is walking back towards the house in this final culmination, this climactic moment. And there's this great little weird moving Dutch angle shot. And it's just so interesting. And there's just a bunch of moments like that that visually stood out to me. And, you know, they just completely accentuate the storytelling that's also going on and the themes that are being portrayed throughout the film.
Yeah, I agree. That Dutch angle was really. I was like, they didn't use a lot of that there. So when I saw that, I was like, what? It was such a very strange and very quirky and just a very, very weird and awesome shot. I love it when filmmakers introduce these weird nuances to their films that sort of indicate a change of pace, a change of tone. You know, that's what that Dutch angle was for, I think. And like you said, it was a reference. I think it was a reference to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre too. And so, Dylan, what did you think about that twist ending the first time you saw it?
Yeah, so speaking of the what moment, spoiler alerts, obviously the killers are revealed in the end. That's automatically a fresh take on the genre, just the fact that there were two killers. I think that's so interesting, and it's such a cool concept. But obviously, they are revealed to be Stu and Billy. And I think the movie does a great, great job at keeping you guessing. It throws so many curveballs at you. You know, you have Billy's character immediately in the film getting arrested. And then, you know, you think his name is clear, but then the entire time he's still acting weird and he's still acting strange. And then you have even, you know, Randy acting strange. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you suspected that it could be everyone. They have the ongoing storyline where you don't know if it's going to be Sydney's father that's the killer. And I think that entire subplot of her mother being murdered too is just something that keeps the film fresh, and it keeps you guessing constantly. And I think by the time that the reveal is made and the big twist happens, it's not something that the average audience member sees coming. I think you're so focused on everything else that's going on. It's almost like a giant magic trick where Wes Craven is just using these diversion tactics to make you look one way when in actuality all the magic is happening over here behind the scenes. And for me, the first time I watched it, I completely fell for it. You know, upon later rewatches, you're able to kind of pick up on hints that make the answer more clear than it is the first time you watch it. But yeah, I was totally shocked. How about you?
Oh yeah, I was also like in complete shock when I watched it. And mentioning your point about identifying hints in later viewings, that is just like a testament to how great this film is, because the twist isn't really something that came out of left field. It was something that was built and hinted towards, and the first time you watch it, you just sort of disregard these hints because I think the movie is trying to make this point that the audience is so accustomed to seeing this formula, this horror movie formula, one killer, the virgin survives, all these other tropes, right? And so Wes Craven pretty much just like slaps you in the face and says, hey, look, here's another way of doing horror movies that is completely going to fool you, you know? And I think he masterfully employs both like diversions and red herrings too, because I feel like the audience would be justified. Like if someone told me they thought that Dewey was the killer, I wouldn't blame them at all, because like there's like a scene in the movie where Dewey's like holding the ghost face mask in front of his face, and which is like a false jump scare, mm-hmm. And I was like, that could be a hint towards Dewey being the killer.
Yeah.
And it just obviously it's like a lot of like red herrings and diversions to fool the audience, to sort of take the audience like on these like winding and on this winding path where you have no idea where you're gonna go. And so yeah, I thought that was great.
Yeah, and I want to give another quick shout out to the screenwriter Kevin Williamson. This is actually, Scream is based on a true story. I just found this out recently. The University of Florida in 1990 were actually terrorized. In a matter of 3 days, 5 students were brutally killed by a man by the name of Danny Rowling. And obviously Williamson was keeping up with the news at this time. And what he saw eventually turned into Scream. And I think he was able to take it and run with it and make a story that is so well crafted and is so fun and entertaining. And it's obviously very interesting to look into the lore that it is based on, which is clearly terrifying and horrific in real life as well.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect this movie to be based on a true story either, which is just, again, Wes Craven turning something, taking an idea and turning it into something even like just completely different, but also like incredible and groundbreaking. So obviously that story, the original story, is unfortunate, but I admire the fact that Craven was able to just completely pervert it into something artistically groundbreaking, you know, especially for the horror genre.
Yeah, and to wrap things up here with some final thoughts, we definitely have to talk about the new trailer. We have technically Scream 5, the fifth installment in the series, but it is following in Halloween 2018's footsteps to seemingly retcon the other films to act as a direct sequel to the first. You know, it wasn't really doing it for me, but I am definitely still interested in seeing it. What did you think of that new trailer?
Honestly, I think that I'm always worried when Hollywood does this. They reincarnate these incredible franchises and try to make sequels and reboots that have no soul or passion to them, no genuine appreciation for the original. And so they goof it up and they don't care because they're just making a crap ton of money off of it. So my feelings are reserved. Trailers have fooled me before. I'm going to wait till the movie comes out, and that's when I can really decide.
I completely agree. One thing's for sure, just as a fan of the genre, as a fan of Wes Craven, and as a fan of this amazing movie, you'll be sure to catch me in the theater opening night with my bag of popcorn and ready to go. So yes, this concludes the first episode of the Talking Pictures podcast. Thank you all so much for listening, and we hope you tune in next week for our second installment of the Talking Pictures podcast. Until then, I was Dylan Mahoney.
And I was Andrew Lee. We hope you have a great day.
Yes, thank you for listening.